So, a very warm welcome from me. My name is Niall of Archer, for those who don't know me. And welcome to this 5-week seminar where we're going to be focusing on the Metta-Bhavana. And I've called it Who Hates the Metta-Bhavana, partly because I quite like the title, because it's slightly shocking and it's... Well, it brought you here, didn't it? So it sort of worked. But partly because I want to, in a way, look at the practice afresh and acknowledge that for many of us, it can be a practice that's not very straightforward, not very easy. So I want to look at it afresh, including acknowledging any difficulties that we have with the practice. So I wanted to encourage sort of everybody to come, whether you love the practice, because you can always go deeper with it, or whether you really don't like the practice and never do the practice. I wanted to encourage the whole spread of us to come so that we can look at it afresh and see if we can't find more riches within it. So I've done this course in the past, but I've done it as a course. And I've normally done it over 6 weeks. This time round, I'm not doing it as a course. It's a drop-in. But I really would encourage you to try and come to all 5 weeks if you can. Because I want to build up how we look at the practice. I want to sort of build that up quite slowly. If you can't come to a particular week, we'll make sure that it's recorded and put on to our website so you can catch up. And I'll also try and do a wee recap at the start of each week. But yes, it would be better if you could come to each week. And also, a couple of things. If you want to, it would be quite good to bring some pen and paper to make notes. If you haven't done that tonight, and probably you haven't, that's fine. You can just... I'll recap anyway, and we're not going to cover a huge amount of ground, at least to start off with. But I think it would be good to just bring a notebook and a pen to make some notes, because it's so easy to think, oh yes, I've found a new way in into this practice, and then to forget a few weeks later. And lastly... Well, I'm going to encourage you in the same way that I'd encourage you if you had paid for a 6-week course to do this course. What I'm going to suggest is that you decide, if you possibly can, and obviously if you want to meditate at home every day for the duration of these 5 weeks. And I'll suggest what you might do. Each week, but particularly with a focus on the Metta-Bhavana. Not necessarily exclusively. If you want to do the mindfulness of breathing, of course, that's great too. But particularly with a focus on the Metta-Bhavana, I'm going to suggest that you, if you possibly can, decide to do that. If you've not got yet a regular meditation practice at home, this could be your chance to try it out. With meditation, in a way, until you do it regularly, you don't really know whether it works or not. So if you give it 5 weeks, you'll know whether it works or not for you, in your life, in your experience. So this could be a good 5 weeks to try that out. So that's what I'm going to encourage you to do. If you do that, you'll get more from the Wednesday evenings as well. You'll get more from the content, because it'll be more experiential. We can talk about how it's been going for you. Okay, so what I'd like us to do is we're going to start with a short period of meditation, which I'll lead us into. I'll lead us into it by encouraging us to become aware of our bodies. And the breath, like we would in the mindfulness of breathing. But I'm not going to suggest that you do all the stages of the mindfulness of breathing. When you feel relatively connected, or if you do feel relatively connected with your physical experience and with the breath, then I'm just going to ask you to stay with that. Of course, if you want to, if you find your mind wandering and you're distracted, it can always be helpful to drop in the counting as you would in the first or the second stage of the mindfulness of breathing. And then at some stage in the practice, we'll just move into a period of just sitting where you don't have to try and do anything. You just sit. So we'll meditate for about 15 or 20 minutes in a way to just arrive. Are you warm in here or cold?
Cold.
Yeah, so okay. Maybe we could. Are you all cold?
He's gonna get really warm.
No. Okay, we're just going to leave the extract on, but we won't. I don't know what it'll do. It'll probably get warmer. So those of you who are warm, it'll get warmer. Those of you who are cold, that'll be good. So maybe taking a few deeper breaths just to arrive into the room and onto your seat. And particularly when you breathe out, as you breathe out, see if you can have a sense of becoming aware of your body softening a little more. The tension in the body dropping away a little bit more. So as if every out-breath can be a releasing of holding on to tension. For the next 20 minutes or so, you don't have to worry about all the preoccupations of your day. There's nothing particular that you don't have to do. You could decide to just really enjoy having some time and space. Without any pressures upon you. And also as you breathe out, notice the weight of your body, and the contact with the seat and with the ground, the mat or the floor beneath you. See if you can have a sense of letting go of the weight of the body through those points of contact. giving your weight to the ground, to the earth beneath you. It's as if the body becomes rooted to the ground. Like a mountain is rooted to the ground. Noticing with a kindly, friendly awareness, starting to notice the sensations in the body. Beginning firstly with the sensations in your feet. You may not have consciously become aware of your feet all day. Just spend a moment or two seeing if you can feel your feet. The toes. The soles. Contact your feet make with the mat or with the ground. If you're wearing socks, see if you can notice the contact of the socks, of the cloth against your skin. And if your feet are bare, notice whatever the skin is in contact with. You don't have to think about your feet. It's not an idea of your feet that you're trying to have. It's an experience of the bare sensations in the region of your feet. You can extend that friendly awareness of the bare sensations into your legs, working up from the ankles and shins, the calves, through the knees, contact of clothing. The mat, if your feet are on the mat, your legs are on the mat. And the upper legs, the thighs, see if you can have a sense of the legs from the inside. Notice any sensations in the legs, not just on the surface of the legs. But an awareness from the inside. Sometimes we can be subtly tensing the muscles in the legs. All the time. So if you can become aware of the muscles and the sensations in the legs, just that kindly awareness can allow a kind of softening. Hips and the buttocks and the pelvis and groin. The weight of your upper body dropping down through the bottom, through your buttocks and sitting bones in the buttocks. A sense of the lower half of your body being rooted to the ground, like the base of a mountain is rooted to the ground. The upper body rising up. You could imagine there's an invisible thread lifting the upper body from your crown, the peak of the mountain. A natural lift in the spine, without strain. Noticing sensations in the back. Again, with a kindly awareness. Sometimes the sensations in our bodies are pleasant, sometimes they're unpleasant. Sometimes they're neutral. And here we're just trying to acknowledge whatever we feel without trying to change it, but acknowledging it with kindness, with friendliness, with a degree of acceptance So sensations in the back, from the lower back, the mid-back, all the way to the back of the neck. Just noticing if you're holding on in the shoulders. Very easy to hold on in the shoulders habitually. And if you are, seeing if you can let go of the shoulders a little bit more, allowing them to soften a little bit more. As the shoulders fall away down the sides of your body, the arms can just hang from the shoulders. And noticing any sensations in the arms. The upper arms, the elbows, the forearms, and wrists. And the hands. Tiny myriad sensations in your hands. See if you can have an appreciative awareness of your hands. Imagining them becoming soft and heavy. And bringing your awareness down into the belly, inside you, the region of the stomach. And see if you can have a sense of your belly being soft. And notice the movement in the belly as the breath flows through you. There's nothing else you need to do. If you can just maintain a kindly awareness in the belly. The sensations in the belly. And watch them change as you breathe. Moment by moment. Trying to let the breath become quiet. If you can hear yourself breathing, you're probably forcing. Staying in the belly. And sometimes there can be a sort of tightness in the belly. Another place where we hold on to tension. That can feel a little uncomfortable. But all you need to do is stay with a friendly awareness of the sensations you feel, even if those sensations are uncomfortable. You can trust the awareness. It's a positive process. Could imagine that you're relaxing in a warm bath with nothing to do. With the body softening. In the belly. trying to sit as still as you can, the body like a mountain. Okay, good. So hopefully that's helped us arrive a little bit more into our own bodies, into the shrine room, into the evening. What I'd like us to do now is turn our minds to the practice of the Metta-bhavana. First of all, thinking about what your response is, your sort of immediate gut response. Is to that practice. Is it somewhere like, I love this practice and that it has transformed my life? Or is it that I really don't like this practice, hate this practice, never do this practice, and wish the Buddhists would stop going on about it? Or somewhere in between. There's probably a whole range of responses that we can have somewhere on that spectrum. And it might be good to not just know, have a think about what your response is, but also what your experience is when you do that practice, or when you have done it in the past. What is your experience? If you love the practice, why do you love the practice? What happens to your experience through doing the practice? If you loathe the practice, why do you loathe the practice? Again, what happens in your experience when you do the practice? And of course it changes. It's not like we're fixed so that we'll only have one response for all time. But what I want to get us to be a little bit more conscious of is our general attitude to this practice, at least as we are at the moment. Yeah. So what I'd like you to do is to talk about that with a partner in pairs for about 5 minutes, and then we'll collect our thoughts on the flip chart. So just becoming conscious of your experience and your response and your experience, and being as honest as you can. You are, particularly on this seminar, well, always, but particularly on this seminar, you're allowed to say that you really don't like the practice and never do it. And wish that you'd never heard of it. Although being here, well, I could ask you why you're here then, couldn't I? So just spend 5 minutes, find a partner, introduce yourself, and then talk a little bit about that. Good, good. Sorry to interrupt you. It's always a shame to stop you in mid-flow. But it would be good to hear. We won't be able to hear from everybody, but from as many of you as we can, if you're willing to share what your response is and your experience is, in a way, why you have the response that you do, or as much of that as you want to share. And then what Satyadasa is going to do is write that on the flip chart so that we can all see. Partly it'll help me know how to orientate what the rest of the course, the seminar, you know, what sort of things we cover. And partly I think it's helpful to know that other people also can have similar experiences to you. So anybody willing to brave start us off? Yeah, John.
That's some good advice recently, is if you're having trouble when you're picturing someone, imagine them suffering, like ill or in pain or unhappy, and that brings about more emotion.
Sure. And is that your experience? Is that your...
Yeah, I've only tried that a couple of times. I went to the retreat last weekend, and someone told me that. And it did make
help.
It felt more productive.
Yeah.
Rather than just repeating some phrase that didn't seem to mean anything to me.
Yeah. And overall, what would you say your response is to the practice? Do you...
Frustrating, annoying, dull.
Frustrating, annoying, dull. They're good words to write up. Here we are. Frustrating, annoying, dull. Yeah. Well, that's good. Thank you for saying that. And the thing about trying to empathise with somebody else's suffering... is a good way in. Maybe we could make a note of it, and we might come back to that. But for the moment, I just want to know what our responses are, rather than how we might work in the practice, because we can explore that over the coming weeks. Sorry, there was somebody over here. Yeah, hi.
I have much more resistance to doing metabolic and mindfulness breathing.
Yeah.
Tired.
Yeah.
I want to do the mindfulness breathing because I perceive it as easier. But I've been having like large changing sessions doing only the metabolism. So really like forgiving people for what they've done. Like completely. At the moment I cannot think of anybody I would wish bad to.
Yeah.
And that has been maybe 2-3 times.
Yeah.
Or even I had moments in which later I really felt like incredibly full of love.
Yeah.
Which I never had doing mindfulness breathing.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I have much more resistance to it.
Yes.
And probably that is because I'm, in a way, my mind also doesn't really like change.
Right.
Even though it could be good change.
Yeah.
Still resisting change.
Sure. No, that's really good. That's really sort of insightful, I think, to notice that sometimes, well, I think it's not uncommon that we can find the mindfulness of breathing sort of easier. And then it's not uncommon that somehow the metta-bhavana has a radical effect in our interactions in everyday life, like forgiveness, for example, or suddenly feeling full of metta for no reason at all. That can happen, even though you think, oh, this practice is just a slog when I'm doing it, and the resistance. And then very sort of insightful response about sometimes we resist change even when that's positive change. It's like we like the me, well, we don't always like the me and the experience that we have, but we're comfortable with it in the sense that we're familiar with it. And even a positive change can somehow we can resist that. Yeah. I feel that when I am about to go on retreat, I know that I am happiest and my most fulfilled on the whole on retreat, But I tend to, just as a retreat's coming up, think, oh, I don't want to go. So it's a bit like a metta-bhava is a little like a little mini retreat. Yes.
I tend to think that I tend to do mindfulness at home about 90%.
Yes.
And I think it's because I feel that there's an activity to anchor onto.
Yeah.
When I start the metta-bhava, I can often just feel like I'm not doing anything.
I see.
And then, so I resist starting to do it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'll easily come away thinking I haven't done anything.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that, for instance, in the difficult person spot, I never can really feel the same difficulty as I do in real life.
Ah.
So I'm not actually feeling like I'm connecting to the emotion.
Yes.
So then I'm sat there going, what, you know, I just feel all this crap.
Yep.
In real life, but now it's, where is it?
Where is it? Yes. Yes. Now that again is a very, very insightful kind of point, and probably not a completely uncommon experience. So two things. First of all, it can seem like there's it's clearer as to what you do in the mindfulness of breathing. Sometimes in the metta-bhavana, the way we teach it, you've got so many options. You're not quite sure which one to choose, which direction to go in. And as you say, it can feel like, oh, I haven't done anything particularly. And then that's really interesting that we sometimes know that in real life we've got difficulties or strong feelings with regard to somebody. We sit down to meditate and they're not there. So then the practice can start to feel like it's not really addressing our experience, at least not very fully. Yeah. And then that doesn't feel very satisfactory. Yeah.
I use it, I really use it to improve my relationships with people, especially the in-laws.
Right. Yeah.
But then I feel slightly guilty that I'm using it.
Just
a general cultivation of love rather than
I see. Practical. Yeah. As if a specific relationship is somehow, it's not appropriate for the practice,
or I might use it for a business meeting.
Yeah. So that's interesting, isn't it? And then you use the word guilt. But the very fact that you use it for those specific relationships or a business meeting or whatever implies that you feel that it works in those specific cases, does it?
Well, I'm not sure if it's a business meeting, but I mean, definitely
with the in-laws. Great. Great.
Friends that you've got problems with.
Yeah, it does work. So you've got some positive experiences of how it affects actual relationships. But yes, what about, are we using the practice in a slightly utilitarian way or something? Yeah. It's an interesting question. I mean, maybe I'll come back to it, but in my initial response is it's fine. We don't need to worry about feeling guilty about working on a specific relationship if that relationship is improving. What happens with on several levels you don't need to worry about it. It's good in itself if the relationship improves, but also we create positive habits in the mind. So it does transfer to other relationships, because when we dwell with metta for one person, we're getting used to dwelling with metta. Yeah. Similarly, if we're dwelling in resentment with one person, we're getting used to dwelling in resentment. So you can be confident that it has a wider, more general, positive effect on you beyond that specific relationship. Yeah. Bit interesting. Yes.
Yeah, I find the metta-bhava more enjoyable and more engaging than mindfulness of breathing.
Ah, great.
I find mindfulness of breathing, I do like it. I kind of like the clarity of it, but I find it can get a bit boring.
Yes. Dull.
The metta-bhava is always kind of something a bit more to think about, a bit more kind of creative.
Yes. And have you been noticing the positive effects in your life, in your relationships? Has that been having an effect?
I have.
Yeah.
I mean, I, I, I notice the positive effects of both.
Yeah.
Almost in equal measure.
Yeah.
I do find the method easier.
Oh, that's great. That's good. That's interesting. Yeah. And people do fall into, well, we're bound to find one practice more easy than the other. The interesting thing is that that can change. Over some time, it can change. So we can go through phases where one feels more attractive or easy. But it's interesting, yes, the mindfulness of breathing is the one that you find dull and the metta more engaging. Yeah, good. Yes.
I find it gives quite a lot of perspective and enables me to be a lot more light-hearted in that way. I kind of look forward to it.
The metta, sorry.
Yeah, the metta bhavana.
Yeah.
As opposed to the mindfulness of breathing, which I feel, I don't know, it feels a bit sort of potentially forced and mechanical.
Ah, interesting.
It's much easier to take simple things seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, this perspective and this lightness that, lightness of heart, not being overly serious, that you are saying you associate with the metta bhavana practice, but not so much with the mindfulness of breathing. I think that that's a really good perspective, actually, to bring to both practices. And what I'm going to cover in the next 5 weeks actually applies to both practices. It's just that I'm going to approach it from the direction of the metta bhavana. But the mindfulness of breathing and the metta bhavana aren't so dissimilar, at least in terms of how we need to work with our mind. Yeah, a bit interesting. Thank you, Jim. Yeah.
I find it difficult to start with myself. It would be much easier to start with a good friend.
Another person, a good friend, yes. Yeah. Yes.
Can you do that? Or is
it I think you can. I think you, and then you could come back to yourself.
Yeah.
I think you could explore. When we teach the practice, we teach a particular form that is a traditional form, and it does have a rationale behind it. On the other hand, I think it's good to explore the form, and then it's also good to feel that there's freedom in the form or with the form, so that you work in a way that feels appropriate to you. So you try it, you explore it. What does happen if I put the friend in first and then me in second? Does that, you know, work more easily or not? Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes I feel the metta doesn't feel like meditation in the same way that mindfulness of breathing does. It's sort of a little bit like this kind of thing over to the left. So you have to use a lot of visualization to get the positive feelings going. It kind of seems like it's just this positive visualization exercise, an imaginative exercise, rather than meditation.
And what do you mean by meditation? Do you mean a more sort of focused concentration? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Yeah.
And in that sense, they do have different flavours, don't they, the mindfulness and the metta, in that there is a more of an emphasis on focus and concentration on in the mindfulness of breathing. Yeah. But yes, it might be that we have particular associations with even that word, meditation, and this doesn't quite fit what our associations are. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I sometimes have difficulty when my practice of metta bhavana hasn't translated out into real life. So I've had a sit and I've done the metta bhavana and I felt a really cultivated metta
for
myself and those around me, and then I start my day and just find everyone and everything intensely annoying and get frustrated and and just wonder what happened on that metta.
And then how does that affect your response to the practice?
The moment I'm actually kind of coming back to it again, I'm finding metta easier to practice than mindfulness.
Uh-huh.
I think it was something I came across a lot when I first started practicing metta.
Yeah.
It's getting better, but it's still something I find find. Yeah. Yeah. It's just interesting that sometimes when you feel you've heard a good sit, it doesn't translate.
Yeah.
The rest of the day, or it doesn't carry on.
Yeah. It's like when we're meditating, we've tried to create for a while sort of ideal conditions for looking at our mind and working on our mind. You know, we've reduced input, we've created hopefully a pleasant environment in which to sit, and a very conscious intention to work on our mind. In real life, of course, it's just much more complicated, isn't it? Much, much more complicated and much, much more difficult. I say real life, it's not that meditation isn't real life. Meditation is definitely a part of real life. I mean in our ordinary non-meditative activity, it's much, much more complicated. There's loads more input. One of the things I'm going to keep coming back to over the weeks is patience, the quality of being patient with ourselves. Patience. I think we're so used to living in a culture where we get instant gratification, instant reward. Something, we want something, we press a button and it's ours. And meditation, unfortunately, isn't like that. Actually, anything of real value probably isn't like that. Certainly not if it's of real spiritual value, it's not like that. And we need to learn to cultivate patience with ourselves. Also, we're going to have to stop, but meditation's a bit mysterious in that sometimes we're not fully conscious of what is happening, the changes that are taking place under the sort of radar of consciousness. Sometimes profound, radical shifts in perspective can be happening that only emerge later on. Let's have a cup of tea. I'd like to carry on exploring this a little bit more after tea. So if you haven't had a chance to speak and you want to, you'll have a chance later on. Good, so welcome back. So, before the tea break, we were exploring our responses to the metta-bhavana, our experience of the metta-bhavana, in sort of fairly general terms. And I just want to see if there are any other responses before I start telling you a little bit more about how I want to explore it in this seminar. It'd just be interesting to hear if there are any more responses to the metta-bhavana. You might even want to think about, well, why have I come tonight? I mean, it might be that you come every Wednesday, but it might be... Hello.
When I first started...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I felt it quite intensely, and also I felt that it really changed my relationship to someone as well.
Yeah.
But gradually that's kind of more off.
Yes.
And I find that I'm not getting this
Yes.
And I'm kind of waiting for it to change another relationship.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. And it hasn't. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of why I'm here, because I'm still going to get that back again.
Yes, and that's a good reason in a way to come back, I think. It's very, very easy, I think, in meditation to lose freshness, to lose a sense of exploration and even interest. Maybe wonder is too strong a word, maybe it isn't. It's very easy to lose all of that sense of newness and freshness. When we are new to meditation, that is often naturally there, and then it just becomes a bit tired. And I think if we're going to carry on with an effective meditation practice that spans not just months but years, which I hope we do, then we need to learn how to keep that aliveness, that spontaneity, that freshness, that joy, that enthusiasm and interest in our practice. So I think that's a good reason to be here, and I hope that by looking afresh at the practice, you can revive some of that. Yeah, good.
I had a similar experience when I first started meditating, and I was really intense.
Yes.
Kind of response, but somewhat in the opposite direction.
Yes.
Having kind of something slightly grief-like about it.
Mm.
But yeah, just kind of, not that I was trying to control it, but very uncontrollable, just pouring out of,
yeah.
of very strong emotion. And then similarly, that sort of went, and also I had a kind of gap in my practice. And
yes.
Coming back to it more recently, over the last kind of year, it's felt quite different and more effortful, I suppose. So, yeah, and it's not that I necessarily think that that's what I would want every time.
No.
I was doing this partner.
Sure.
But it does, there is something different. I wonder about, there might be lots of reasons why that was, but
yeah.
It was very stark.
Yeah. Yeah, no, interesting. And again, it's not that we can necessarily repeat experiences and not that we'd necessarily want to repeat experiences. Sometimes those cathartic kind of releases of almost energy can arise in meditation, particularly sometimes when we're relatively new to practice or very new to practice. But nevertheless, what you've said is interesting. You use the word effortful. And it feels more effortful. And I think one of the things that I'd like us to explore is what it would be like for the meditation not to be so effortful. What it would be like to have a more of a sense of freshness, spontaneity, ease in the metta bhavana practice. So that it doesn't become drudgery and work. I don't know if you know what I mean by it. What that feels like, where you think, oh, I've got 5 stages to go.
yeah.
As it were, do you know what I mean? Yeah. And, gee, and I've only just done me, and now there's all beings at the end. And you just think, and there's a, and even just thinking that can create a slight tightness in our physical experience, as well as our sort of mental experience. There's a slight tensing up, bracing ourselves for the marathon ahead of goodwill that's going to be demanded of us. And all of that is not really the spirit that we're looking for. Not really the spirit that the Buddha had in mind when he said, cultivate goodwill for all beings. That's not quite what Buddhism means. So what I'm going to say a bit more now. So thank you for those of you who spoke, and sorry if you all haven't had time. I think over the weeks we'll hopefully have more time to explore your experience and hear about it. I'd certainly like that. But I want to say a little bit more about how we might work in this meditation practice. Work in a way that doesn't feel like work, actually. To find this effortless, spontaneous, fresh approach to the practice. And I think what I'd like to start from is to encourage us to sort of forget everything that we've learned about the practice. Not quite everything, because the form of the practice, the 5 stages, are very valuable. But I'd like us to sort of forget anything about metta for now and how we cultivate it. I'd like us to start afresh, even if your experience of the practice is generally really positive, and you think you're doing really well in it, and it's working, it can't hurt to start fresh, to take a fresh look at it. But certainly if you feel like it's become dull or less effective, I think it's really valuable to just unlearn some of what we can get into. So I think what I want to first of all emphasize is that in all meditation, there's what we call a receptive dimension and an active dimension to the practice. By a receptive dimension, it's the dimension where we start to just be aware of our experience. And by experience, I mean our physical experience in the body, like we just did at the start of this class. We just became aware of our body and its sensations. But also you can become receptive to your mind. You can notice thoughts You can notice emotions. You can notice the quality of your mind. Does it feel bright? Does it feel dull? Does it feel expansive? Does it feel a bit closed and tight? You can notice just the sort of quality of mind, as well as the actual content of mind, like thoughts or images or emotions or volitions or whatever it is that the mind is creating and doing. But in the receptive dimension to meditation, you notice all of that without any kind of problematizing, without any sense that any of your experience is a problem. You're not trying to turn it into a problem, you're not trying to change it, you're not trying to say, no, I shouldn't be experiencing this experience. You're just noticing with a broad, friendly, accepting attitude that just says, oh, this is what's happening. Whether that experience is pleasant or unpleasant or neutral, you just notice it with a broad, friendly, kindly acceptance and say, this is my experience. It's not wrong. It's just what's happening at the moment. What's more, you try and stay with that experience. So noticing is really important, because sometimes we don't notice. So this is basic mindfulness, isn't it? Noticing what's going on. Sometimes we don't notice, and then we can get into all sorts of habits of being that are unhelpful. Be that from holding tension in our body in an unhelpful way, to getting into negative trains of thought in an unhelpful way. That just comes partly from not noticing. So noticing is really, really important. Mindfulness is really, really important. You could say that that is the foundation of the Metta-Bhavana practice, just noticing what's going on. But after noticing, there's a certain art to staying with whatever's unfolding in our experience. So not only do you notice the sensation, the thought, the emotion, the impulse, the image, whatever it is, the sound even, not only do you notice the experience, but then you let your attention stay so that you carry on being with that experience. And what happens when you stay and be with the experience is that you start to notice the subtleties of it, and you notice that they're changing. No experience is static. It's always fluid. If you notice with enough subtlety, then you notice that it's flowing, that it's always changing. So noticing in a friendly, kindly metaphor, you could say, but not in a forced kind of metaphor way, just a relaxed, friendly, accepting way, even if the experience happens to be unpleasant, not problematizing it, not saying, I shouldn't be having this experience, but just noticing it and then trying to stay with. But one more thing I want to say is that in the noticing and in the staying with, I guess in bringing mindfulness to our experience, that's quite different to being lost in experience. Yeah? When we're lost in experience, that means we've lost awareness of what's going on. We're completely wrapped up in that chain of thoughts, in that emotion, in that story, whatever it is. We're lost in it, and we've got no perspective on it. We've not no real awareness that that's what's happening. We're just lost in it. So mindfulness, this noticing, is quite different. It has a different flavour to it, to being lost in experience. It's about having the experience, but not being completely identified with it. Not being completely lost in it. So, for example, if I have an experience of I don't know, anxiety. Say I've got anxiety, or that's part of my current experience, say. So if I notice anxiety, then what I'll notice is that there's some physical sensations connected with anxiety somewhere in my body. When I experience anxiety, one of the places those physical sensations arise is in the belly. And I feel a tightening in the belly, a sort of gripping, a sort of clenching in the belly. But also, probably, if I'm in a state of anxiety, there's going to be thoughts in my mind, ruminating thoughts in my mind, about some subject matter that I'm anxious about. So, for example, if I wanted to, or if I allowed myself to, I could get anxious about all the emails that I haven't answered over the 3 weeks that I've been away that are stacked up waiting for me somewhere. And actually, my emails have stopped working. The whole system for me has stopped working. So I don't even know if I've got all my emails. So I could get anxious about that. Oh no, this is better. No, this is better. Matty's anxious that I might not have her email. So notice that. So you notice the thought. Now that, if I'm just lost in anxiety, I won't even be aware that my belly is clenched, and I won't be even aware that I'm ruminating about my emails. I'll just be doing it, and I'll be lost in it. Which is quite different to me thinking, to me noticing, oh yes, there's this tightness here, and oh yes, this thought of emails keeps recurring, doesn't it? And I can just watch that recurrence without problematizing it. Yeah? Does that make sense, the difference between noticing and saying with, and getting lost in it? So this is basic mindfulness. This is basic mindfulness. It's the foundation of any meditation practice. It's the foundation of metta bhavana. And the other thing I really, really want to emphasize is that you don't just notice and stay aware. You do that with as much friendliness, kindness as you can, with a warmth, an open heart, particularly if the experience is uncomfortable or painful. Particularly if there's discomfort, either physical or emotional, mental. It's really important not to start telling yourself off that this shouldn't be happening. Yeah? Or either blaming yourself or blaming others or the world. It's easy, isn't it, to do that. So I've just been stuck for almost, 17, 18 hours at Alicante Airport, while the French air traffic controllers were on strike and my plane was cancelled and delayed. And I had plenty of time to notice my experience. Actually, it wasn't all at Alicante Airport. I managed to get to the beach and I was with a good friend and it was fine. But nevertheless, it wasn't the experience that I had sort of planned nor was wanting. And I could have got into all sorts of resentment about all sorts of things, actually. And yet, in the experience, if I just stayed with it and noticed it, notice even the tendency to blame French air traffic controllers for my experience, if I stayed with that, it didn't overtake me. And actually, the experience was fine, on the whole. Not always pleasant, but not a big deal either. So I'm going to encourage us in the Metta Bhavana to notice and stay with our experience with friendliness, with that non-problematizing kind of approach. It's all okay. It's fine to have the feelings and the experience you're having, even though they're not necessarily the ones you might want, even though they're not necessarily what we call pleasant. Yeah? It's fine to just stay with them. That is the art of meditation. At least part of the art. Now then there's a whole other dimension to meditation, which is the active dimension, where on the basis of being aware, of being mindful of our experience, we can start to transform it. We can start to encourage it to unfold in a particularly positive direction. And the Metta Bhavana, of course, has an important active dimension. However, without this receptive dimension as a foundation, the active dimension just doesn't work. It becomes more and more fruitless. It becomes actually part of the problem if we're not careful. If we just force the practice without noticing and being kind to the experience that we're actually having, then it just becomes, at best, it becomes dull and a bit sort of workmanlike, a bit like drudgery, and at worst it can even become quite unpleasant. Yeah, quite unpleasant, and we'll probably stop doing the practice. So I don't want to talk about the active dimension just yet. I'll come on to it in a few weeks' time. What I want to dwell on, and ask us to dwell on, is very much this receptive dimension of the practice of meditation, the noticing, the staying with our experience, with a friendly, kindly awareness, with an open-heartedness, without problematizing. Also notice if you are problematizing it. So very often we will find ourselves, particularly if we've got that sort of habit of mind, we will start telling ourselves off or blaming others or making our experience into a problem. Well, if that's the case, notice that. Yeah, that's something to then notice and include in your kindly awareness, and don't problematize that. Do you see what I mean? So whatever happens, don't turn it into a problem. Even if you're turning it into a problem, don't turn that into a problem. Yeah? Don't turn turning it into a problem into a problem. Just notice what you can with a kindly awareness. And almost, somebody was saying, a sort of lightness, a lightness of touch, a sort of almost like a sense of humour, particularly if we're getting into habitual, unhelpful trains of thought, like anxiety. See if you can just bring a sense of humour to it, a slight sense of how absurd it is that we're doing this. Here I go again, what a silly thing to do. But without telling ourselves off. Yeah? If you can do that with a sense of humour, then that's great. If you get into, I'm a nasty person, evil person, stupid person, bad person, then stop doing that if you can, but at least bring awareness to that and don't turn that into a problem. If you keep noticing without problematizing, you can include everything in your experience in this approach. That is the process that I'm saying you can trust. The reason you can trust it is because it is always positive to notice and bring awareness to our experience. Regardless of the experience itself, it's always positive to bring a kindly awareness to it. Slightly magical, I don't even know why it's true, but it is. It's always, always, always positive. So you can trust that process, even though the content of the mind or the content of your experience might not be what you want. So let me pause there and just see if there are any questions first. Does that make sense, this noticing? Yes?
What about if the contents of your experience is too painful to be dealing with?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Yeah. So, sometimes, I don't know if you're talking about physical pain or emotional pain or both. Or both, okay. So, let me deal with the physical first, and maybe we'll come back to either next week or the week after. I want to spend more time on looking at difficult experience and painful experience in particular. So I'm not going to be able to cover everything just in the time that we've got. But just to give you a little bit of a pointer. So, sometimes... it depends. Just take physical pain. Sometimes the physical pain, of course it's very unpleasant, but what we are doing often is making it worse in our mind. one of the ways that we make physical pain worse in our mind is by tensing around it, by either physically tensing the muscles around it, which is very habitual and instinctive, or by tensing in our mind about it, like, I shouldn't be having this, this is awful. We even say things like that to myself, I cannot bear this, yeah, I cannot stand this, etc., etc. All those words and thoughts and instincts of tensing make the bare sensation worse. It adds another layer of pain to our experience. So what I'm trying to, what meditation can do, and what I'm trying to encourage us to explore, is not doing that second layer of pain. If we can not do that second layer of pain, not make it worse, but just stay with the sensations that we're having, then paradoxically, we can always bear it. Because it's only the current moment, the present moment, that instant, that we have to bear it. Yeah? I know those moments follow other moments and follow other moments, but actually awareness is only in this moment. So it's only this moment we have to bear. It's when we think this is going to go on forever, and I start speculating about future and how this awful, painful experience is going to go on, that I start turning it into even more of a problem. Yeah? I start to catastrophize and then tense. So something about the art of, can I stay with the bare experience moment to moment? So I'll just give you a wee example. Now, fortunately, I don't experience chronic physical pain. I know some people do, and if you do, well, A, you have my sympathy, and B, we might be able to explore a little bit more in detail how you do work with that, although I'm not an expert. But every so often, of course, like everybody, I do experience physical pain. So, for example, on this retreat, at times I was experiencing some pain in my leg. So I'm sitting cross-legged in meditation, and there would be this pain in my leg. And what I did was just what I've been encouraging you to do, is to just stay with the bare sensation. But I tried to also let go of the assumption that it was painful. Because actually that label, pain, an assumption that it's painful, is a concept that doesn't exist. It's a man-made, human-made, mind-made concept. Now, I was on retreat, I was in a good state, and I was able to do that. I'm not saying that you can always do this, so don't turn it into a problem if you can't. All I'm saying is that I was able, on this retreat, to at times let go of the assumption that it was painful. So then I was just curious about sensations. I was just curious, oh, this is a strong sensation in my leg. And sort of taking an interest in those sensations. I also tried to let go of the assumption that there was a me having the pain. A real fixed me that was having the pain. Because that's our fundamental assumption that Buddhism is trying to undermine, to get us to see through, this delusion of a fixed and separate selfhood. So I tried to let go of a sense that there was a me that was in pain. And for the time that I was able to do that, or not do the me-ing, not do the selfing, and not do the assuming it was painful, just staying with bare sensations of experience, what happened was, there was strong sensation, but I was no longer able to say whether it was pleasant or unpleasant. It was just this kind of tingling, vibrating energy in my leg that moved around, was slightly warm, was slightly unfamiliar, perhaps, wasn't in my other leg. But I couldn't tell you whether it was completely painful. I'd stopped trying to label it in that way or push it away. And one of the things that happened is that it loosened, because obviously there's muscles that are tense there, and they loosen, and something else happened. Do you see what I mean? Now, you can't make pain go away. If you try and make it go away, then you're not prepared to stay with it. And then we get back into clenching and tensing and making it worse. So one of the things that I'm going to encourage us to keep doing, I don't know if that's helpful so far, but one of the things I'm going to encourage us to keep doing is to let go of expectations that our experience is going to change. Let it just be, without any expectations, let it be. And stop wanting it to be something else. See if we can just let it be. If we can do that, then a bit like I was saying in the announcement, what you start to find is that all experience has value to it. It is experience of being conscious, of being alive, and that has intrinsic value to it. May not be the type of experience we want, but when you're in touch with the value of consciousness, the fact of whether it's what you want or not becomes less relevant. It becomes almost quite small in comparison to just the fact that there's life, there's value, there's awareness. This miracle of awareness starts to have more importance and meaning than, oh, I'm stuck in Alicante Airport and I'd like to be in my bed. Do you know what I mean? What a petty, narrow way of looking at life. Of course I do it. I'm not saying I don't. But I'm also aware that there's another way of being. Maybe we can say more about emotional pain and on another evening. Yeah.
Make a distinction between receptive
and active.
And active. To me, the receptive still sounds active somehow. Like, you know, that there's an active or conscious choice going on. Because the other option is habitual.
Yeah.
It's just happening.
Yeah.
So that, to me, it sounds like there has to be this conscious decision.
Yeah.
And then that sounds active.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
So what?
In a way, the words are limited. You're absolutely right, and thanks for pointing that out. By being receptive, I don't mean blobbing out and doing nothing. Mindfulness is very, very active in a certain sense. What I mean by it, though, is not trying to change our experience, but to allow our experience, but to stay aware of experience. And that requires, as you say, a certain intentionality, a certain focus, a certain decision, even a motivation. Part of what I'm trying to do is give us motivation to do this and to keep pointing that it's really valuable to do this, as opposed to just blobbing out. That sounds, well, it is a pejorative term, but as opposed to just letting our habitual mind do its thing. So you're right, there's an active dimension to the receptive dimension. I'm trying to make the distinction between letting our experience just be and unfold, and trying to deliberately transform experience, both of which are valuable dimensions. Sometimes people talk about, you can read popular books on meditation, which start to get all pejorative about that active dimension, and start to sort of say, it's all about just being with our moment to moment. So there's some truth in that, but it tends not to be the whole story for most people. So for now, but you're right, the very receptivity has a intention behind it. But for now, what I'm going to encourage us to do is, for the rest of the evening, which is just 10 minutes or so, I'm just going to ask us to sit and become aware of our experience. But at home, what I'd like you to do is, during this week, if you can, every day, sit and become aware of your experience. Try and become aware of your experience in terms of your body and its sensations, but also in terms of your thoughts, in terms of your emotions, in terms of your intentions and volitions. So sit and just sit for 5 or 10 minutes. And then if you've got time, and some of you have got a regular meditation practice, then what I'd encourage you to do is do the 5 stages as a metta bhavana. Do the 5 stages. But in the 5 stages, what I'm going to ask you to do is forget about cultivating metta. In fact, forget about metta at all. Forget about cultivating. So it's a metta bhavana without the metta or the bhavana. All I'm going to ask you to do is bring the people to mind, yourself and the other people. Hold them in your awareness as best you can, and just notice your response. Notice what happens when you hold them in your awareness, and do it with an attitude of there's no wrong answer. There's no expectation, there's no wrong answer. You're just being interested in your response. So if your response is no response, if it's just complete blank, notice that. Stay with that. If your response is aversion and irritation, frustration, whatever it is, stay with that. Notice that. Don't dwell in it, but notice it in the way that I'm trying to make the distinction. Notice it with kindly awareness. If your response is love and metta, notice that. And include that in this awareness. Don't even get lost in metta. Yeah? So just sit with your experience of the 5 stages. Do the metta bhavana practice in this fresh way, where we're just emphasizing for now the receptive dimension of our experience. Does that make sense? Or are there any questions of clarification? It might even feel like you're not doing anything. You might even start to think, this is silly, or I'm doing it wrong. Well, notice that. That then becomes part of your experience that you're trying to be aware of. Yeah? So there's nothing outside of this practice. You can't have a thought that can't be included in this practice. Everything is up for inclusion in awareness, with a friendly awareness. Yeah? So give that a go. I'd really, really urge you to give that a go, preferably every day. If you can do that, you're going to lay the foundations for transforming your experience with the metta bhavana. And next week we'll build on that. So I really, really urge you to do that, because the more you can do that, the more this 5 weeks will be of real experiential benefit. Otherwise, it will just be a set of bright ideas that I'm coming out with. So really do that. For now, let's sit for just 10 minutes.